Truthseeker and or its affiliates are not responsible for any strange phenomena that may occur during or after listening to this podcast, which may include the following: heightened senses of awareness, psychic abilities, UFO sightings, alien contact, time loss, out-of-body experiences, ringing in the ears, ESP, lucid dreaming, increased synchronicities, astral projection, telepathy, stronger intuition, levitation, miraculous healings, and or remote viewing. Please be advised to listen at your own discretion.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? I'm your host, Truth Seeker. This is the Truth Seeker Podcast. Excited and delighted to be with you guys again to do what I thoroughly enjoy doing, talking to interesting people, having conversations that maybe seem taboo to have in your normal everyday life. You can't really go on a job site and start talking to people about UFOs or psychedelics or aliens or even spirituality for that matter. So I remember when I was on the job site, I had to go there. I had to talk about football and sports and the weather and things like that, you know. So I'd like to really create an atmosphere where we can dig into some of these ideas and thoughts and experiences that we've been having and kind of just throw them up, man, and see what sticks. And so it's really cool when people have had similar experiences and similar encounters, and we can all come to the table and bring our information there and not argue, not debate. You guys know I don't like to do that, even when some people want to prompt you to do that. It's not that there's a specific agenda with the information that comes on. If that's the case, then I wouldn't have a lot of certain guests on here who are strong with their standpoint. But it's really about exploring the information for what it is and seeing if it fits. And I think that a lot of us are having very similar experiences. There's more insight that we can get with the more people that we talk to, and really have like a judge of character for people and just see where they're coming from. So we got a good show for you guys today. I'm going to be speaking to David Curtis about his UFO encounters, and got some really interesting information on how it ties into spirituality and the occult and things like that. And so I think they go hand in hand. I think they're good for the most part. You know what I'm saying? That when we talk about having an agenda, that's an agenda. You know, those are my experiences, my encounters. Other people have had similar encounters. But then again, we've had other people on the show, such as Carrie Cassidy and some other people, who say, wait, these things may not be as pleasant or as good as we, you know, think they are or want them to be, for that matter. I think I want them to be the saviors. I think I want them to be the ones that are watching over us and have been here since the beginning. And I think they are. So, but I think it's just about looking at the information for what it is. And I'm definitely open to that, to have those conversations. Before we go any further, I got to say thank you to everybody who is supporting my work, my music, my podcast. You guys enable me to do this full time. I'm now doing this full time. Just stepping out there on faith, man. I've been doing this for about 6 months now. It's been going great. The numbers have been increasing like daily. The podcast views, the supporters, everything is just increasing. And I couldn't do it without you guys. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. Everybody supporting on patreon.com/truthseeker. I want to give a shout out to a couple new people we have this past week since I did the last show. Like just a couple days ago, we got two new people who's joined the community. This is someone named Home Sauce is the name they're going by. Samantha Christina. Welcome to the family and everybody else who is supporting. Thank you guys so much. If you want to support my work, you could do so for any level of giving, anywhere from $1, $5, $10 a month, whatever you're able to do would mean the world to me. Head on over to patreon.com/truthseeker. There you'll get access to exclusive podcasts, my entire discography of music. I do hip hop and rap music about these topics that we're speaking on today, about UFOs, spirituality, all of that good stuff. I tie all of this information and all my research into my music, and then do the podcast where I kind of break it down and go into some of the detail of those encounters and stuff that are in my music. So you get access to that. We also have Thursday nights, which is called the School of the Mystics that we do, which is going to be tonight, 7 p.m. Central. You get access to that. This is a roundtable discussion. We're going to be starting a course this week, which is how to tap into the prophetic ministry, how to hear the voice of the Holy Spirit, hear God speaking in your own life. And so these are these short teachings we're going to be doing, and there's practical experience and activations, and it's a group discussion. So join us tonight if you're a patron over at patreon.com/truthseeker and get access. So with that, I'm going to say thank you guys. Without further ado, David Curtis, you're joining us from Australia. Is that right, brother?
No, from England.
England. The accent.
Yeah. Right.
Welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
So I guess after I did those interviews with Kerry Cassidy, I guess you found out my work and seen what I do.
Yeah, I did.
And reached out to me wanting to be a guest and showed me your material, some of the other interviews that you've done. And I kind of went in and was just skipping around throughout the interviews because it's a lot of material there. And I went right to the place I needed to go, talking about the White Room and the UFO encounters and things like that. And I thought, I haven't listened to the entirety of it, but I thought that it sounded mostly like pleasant experiences, that it was something that maybe is welcomed versus being something of negative or being tormented or something like that. If you want to set that up, kind of go into some detail, I'm interested to hear the whole story, man, of some of these encounters that you've had.
Okay. So I was born in March the 1st, 1945, at the end of the World War II. And I was living in Oxford, and I was brought up in a non-religious house. So things like good and evil, God, soul, Jesus, they didn't mean anything to me. No, so there was no interiority, you know, there was nothing inside. And my parents, they just lived and they died. And that was it, really. You know, they weren't materialists. They weren't atheists. They were just ordinary people working ordinary jobs. But they had no interest in religion. That was the society they were brought up in. So anyway, at the age of four, I'm lying in bed and I see some flickering lights by the ceiling. And I'm kind of fascinated by them. And I feel my body's expanding into the room. So it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I get a bit freaked out and put my head under the pillow. And I see these entities running around. So that sounds like a typical abduction. I have no memory of an abduction, but something strange was going on with myself. And maybe that was the beginnings of some kind of inner world, you know, an inner world that was not in my family, and I never told my family, and I wasn't particularly frightened, so I didn't tell my parents about it. So then I move on to 15. I joined my sister, who's married to an American in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. So I go over there, I go to high school, and he's just come out of the Air Force, and he's a lab technician in the local hospital. And he gets me a job in the Air Force Base. While I'm working in the Air Force Base, this is 1961 in the fall. And right when I'm working there, the most important UFO abduction case is being investigated right at that moment in that particular Air Force Base. And it's the Betty and Barney Hill abduction. And John Fuller wrote a book called The Interrupted Journey in about 1967. So I'm at a place that's very strategic. It's the first major abduction. In the 50s, they called it contactee. So like George Adamski would say, you know, he's a contactee of with Venus. But since Betty and Barney Hill, it became abduction. So that was like, I had this four-year-old thing, mm-hmm. and then it's kind of like you tick another box. It's like suddenly I'm right at the center, you know. There's a maneuver like on the chessboard, and I'm maneuvered to go over to America. I believe it's all orchestrated. I believe that it's a what I call a metaprogramming by alien intelligence, which I have contact with, direct contact with. And I didn't know then, of course, but looking back, I can see that
yeah.
my life, I haven't been the mover of my life. I haven't been the kind of ego center that's in control. I'm just kind of following. I'm not following orders. In fact, I feel very free. Mm-hmm. I feel a very liberated person. But I feel that somehow I'm kind of receptive and adaptive. And I've been to India. I've been all over. I've lived in about 50 different places. Right. So
Let me ask you this. So is it this inward? Is it this inward knowing? Like, because you said you don't feel forced. It's like you know in your heart of hearts that there's this divine purpose that you're here for. There's this part of your journey, and if you submit to it, amazing things begin to happen. Your life begins to be orchestrated by essentially the hand of the divine. Or you can kind of step away and say, no, I'm not going to entertain that. I'm just going to do what I want to do. That's the type, that's what you're talking about, correct?
Yeah, right. I can go into that. Well, at 15, my sister and brother-in-law, they go to California. I get kind of abandoned. So I'm literally on my own at 15, 16. And I'm with an American family. And then I get a job in a summer camp and I literally have no money and nowhere to go. So I've got to literally ask people to look after me. So I get picked up by this American family and I'm taken to New York, to Poughkeepsie, which is about 50 miles north of New York City on the Hudson River. And I live with a family. The man is an IBM person. He's an inventor. And he's got many patents on computers. And when I leave high school, he gets me a job on the Apollo rocket. So I'm doing some basic work in working on modules and microscopes on the Apollo rocket. And then I go to the State University of New York at Stony Brook, Long Island, near Manhattan. And I'm into classical music, but there's a rock concert and it involves the Soft Machine and Jimi Hendrix Experience. So my first kind of like opening into the rock scene and the hippie scene and counterculture was Jimi Hendrix. But as I say, I went to the concert and for whatever reason, I decided to drop out of college. And I wasn't part of the counterculture. I wasn't aware of hippies, only like Jimi Hendrix, but I wasn't aware of the counterculture. And the young man that I was like friends with in this IBM house, he had gone to Vietnam and he came back from Vietnam and he had a really good Corvette, you know, super Corvette car. And he said, "You want to meet Timothy Leary?" And I didn't know about drugs or Timothy Leary. I was very strange. So he takes me out to this house. Timothy Leary is only living about 20 miles away in Millbrook. And I go out there, we drive into this big estate and there's this big wooden house with psychedelics painted all over the house. And there's all these like people freaked out. So they're just lying around quite freaked out. And we have a conversation with Timothy Leary. But of course, I don't know anything about Timothy Leary. So anyway, in the local paper, it shows Leary and some friends throwing flowers at the policeman at the police station, because they used to raid the house all the time, you know, for like drugs, sex, rock and roll, that kind of thing. So anyway, I'm in Poughkeepsie. I was married. I left my marriage. I left the university. I don't know anything about UFOs, spirituality or anything like that. And I get this room And I just had a change of consciousness. I don't know where it came from. It just like took over. And I describe it as walking around the town, and it was like a gothic. It was very Edgar Allan Poe, very gothic, very shadow world. I like going out in the evenings. I like going out before dawn in the early morning. But I wasn't aware of magic or anything like that. And things started to happen. I started to meet people I would never have met if I wasn't in that state. So doors were opening. So are we on?
Yes, we're good. That was some kind of hiccup.
Oh, sorry. So doors were opening, and I end up going to New Pole State across the river, across the Hudson River. And I start mixing with hippies, and I get into that scene, the hippie scene. And in New Pole, about 10 or so years later, David Wilcox goes to New Pole. And the place I was at before, Stony Brook University, Dan Burrish, and I think Project Camelot interviewed Dan Burrish, and he plays a major part in my life, not personally, but what he revealed about the Looking Glass Yellow Cube, the book, to do with Orion. And I get very connected to Orion, and I'm given a cube in the vision. So it links in with where I was at the university with Dan Burrish. And then later with David Wilcox, I meet a friend in Oxford, and he's now the world scholar on Jung and synchronicity. So I've got synchronicity coming in with David Wilcox and the UFO at Stony Brook with Dan Burrish. So it's like setting the scene, if you will. So, I'm living in New Pole, and I come back to England, and I go off to India, and I spend some time with the Lama there in the Himalayas. And I can kind of quick forward to 1976 when I'm in Oxford, and I'm living in the house of Lawrence of Arabia. And above my window is a blue plaque, and they put blue plaques on houses where very famous people live. And that was T.E. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia. And that was 1976, 77. Well, in that year, a very famous ufologist, John E. Mack, who wrote a book called Abduction from Harvard University, he wrote a definitive book, a biography of T.E. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia, the very year I was in that house. And that's where I had my first UFO experience.
What was that like, your first encounter?
Yeah, right. So I'm in a dark room. I'm looking out of the window in a dark room, and I see this light above some trees in the garden. I have no knowledge of UFOs. I haven't seen any movies on UFOs. So I don't even know it's a UFO. It's just a light in the sky. So I'm sitting there in a very deep state, and suddenly the light penetrates through my left eye. There's no light, there's no beam from the light, but I know the light goes right into my left eye, into my brain, right into my psyche. And I'm very surprised. I don't know what it is. I'm very interested. And it moves to the right. So it's going from the left eye to the right eye. And I think, you know, I wonder what's going on. It's very deep experience. It's slightly troubling, but I'm not really that frightened. And then it goes back to it was going to go back to the left eye, and I knew something radical was going to happen to me. So I kind of like got up and drew the curtains. And I felt like it was trying to move me into a hypnotic state and maybe take over. And just like in my four-year-old experience, although I was expanding into the room, I stopped the process and put my head under the pillow. And even when I've taken psychedelics, I've never let go of my body. I've never what you call had an authentic mm-hmm. out-of-the-body experience. I seem to shut down the process. And that's always been the case. Whenever I've been confronted with, I don't know what it is, but I've had contact with a certain kind of power. It's an invisible power. I'll go into that. It's an invisible power. And I haven't given it a name. I don't know what it is. I have never given it a name. And I link it to UFOs. But this power, it's like coming into the room and you don't want to connect with that power. You know it's there, but you don't want to know what it is. You don't want to, because it really is power itself, if you want to mm-hmm. know. It's like if you take all the concepts of power, political power, power of the ego, power of science, power of technology, even power of UFOs, if you take all of that and put it into an essence and call it a power that has no name, in the Gnostic tradition, they call it the unknown father. In Tibetan Buddhism, they call it the one mind. In ancient Egypt, they call it Thoth or the one. It's the one, it's the emptiness. Mm-hmm. I've actually entered that now. I've actually been into the emptiness, but it's not the power itself. It's a reflection of that power. It's not the power beyond the body in the grave. It's not the power beyond the planet. But it's the same power, but it's like the moon reflecting yep. the sun.
Wow, that's exactly what I was thinking as you're speaking.
Yeah, right, good. Because I've got very important information about the moon recently revealed to me, and about the moon and the earth and the matrix. But anyway, so I'm in the room. I have this experience. It penetrates into my interior life. It's scanning my memory. It's scanning my personality. It's intrusive. It's a very profound experience. But the end result is I don't feel it was bad.
Yeah.
Although it was very intrusive, I don't feel like it wasn't meant to make me feel that I didn't want further experience.
Did it feel good? Was it euphoric at all? A lot of people talk about when having those similar encounters, or even though they're strange, otherworldly, it's euphoric. You feel relaxed. You feel like you've had soma or something, right? Like, did you feel that at all? Was it intoxicating?
Well, not the first experience wasn't, but I can... That's 76, 77. And as I say, it links in with Johnny Mack at Harvard. Well, you see, Timothy Leary was at Harvard, and Ram Dass, mm-hmm. Richard Alpert, he was at Harvard. And they both visited the Lama that I visited in the Himalayas near Tibet.
So you're just like right behind them, maybe?
yeah, that's exactly right. So... If I go forward to 1984 in Oxford, and I call it the powerhouse, because I'll go into the power. I call it the powerhouse. You go through the door, and there are two black pillars. It was owned by a college in Oxford, and this lady rented out rooms, and I had a garret. I had the garret with a big window at the top on the roof. And I looked over the valley and the hills in Oxford, and I call it my powerhouse. And there were two black pillars, but I had no knowledge of occultism or magic. I was getting into that a little later with a lot of people in the Golden Dawn and Crowley, but I didn't think anything of it. You go through the black pillars. So through my life, I had the spontaneous feeling to open up the curtains or look out of the window. It's just a spontaneous feeling, and I might contact UFOs. So this is my first contact, my second contact with UFOs. So I open up the curtains, and I just have this feeling to look to my left, there's a light, look to my right, there's a light in a gray sky. So it's a gray sky, two lights. I write this play about two UFOs in dialogue, and it's as if the UFOs are thought forms having telepathic conversation. I'm so freaked out by that manuscript, I literally throw it away. I don't even get into it. I'm so freaked out by it. And I liken it to, like, if you're in the house with two spies from MI5 or CIA, and they're talking about very important information, you don't want to know that. You know, if they know you've got it,
yeah,
it's important, powerful information. And I felt I was tuning into very powerful information, and maybe I was meant to do it, but I didn't feel, I felt it was overpowering, you know, like I was tapping into some power that freaked me out, just as it did as a child. The next thing that happens is that I'm sitting, and it's in the daytime, I'm looking over the hills, and I feel this energy coming over the hill. I can't explain, it's a sunny day, and it's just this energy that I call power. That's why I call it the powerhouse. It's this power that has no dimensions. I can't tell you what it is. I just know it's this power.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what's happening. I'm looking at the hills, and it comes over the hill. I can feel it coming over the hill, getting closer. It's coming across the countryside. And I knew that when it touches that house, it would wipe me out. So again, I'm having that feeling of being taken over. But this power, I didn't see anything. I didn't have anything in my mind. But it's hard to explain. It's just this invisible presence.
What do you feel like, though? Is that the euphoria when it comes? Is it a good thing, or is it scary and good? I mean...
No, it's like when I was a child, it's quite simple. It's like... you don't want to do it. You know, if somebody says, get on the back of my motorbike, I'm going to go, you know, 100 miles an hour. No, I'm not going to do that. You know, and it was kind of like that. It was quite simple. It's just like a choice, you know, like when I was a child, I didn't have to do it.
Yeah.
So no, you're offering this power. You're offering to take me on this trip out of my body. I'm sorry, but I don't want to go. You're land, you know, and I had UFOs within 10 feet of me.
So
I've had the opportunity to connect.
But you've never had like the physical, like get on board or nothing like that. But you felt like you could have, right?
Let's put it this way. I think there's a reason why I don't want to be taken over. It's to do with independence. It's to do with freedom. It's to do with maturing and getting integrity, getting my own foundation, getting my own strength. Now, throughout my life, I've made contact with a lot of famous people, a lot of powerful people, gurus and pop stars and all that. I've had a chance to be published by Oxford University Press at the highest level. I've never accepted any of that. I could have been in the number one video on the top level television in this famous, like, pop artist, right? This woman wanted me to be her man in her video. I didn't do it. So there's some level of power. There's some level of power that's not only invisible from another planet, from another dimension, but there's power in the world. It's invisible.
Yeah.
You know, you can think of politicians, and you can think of very rich people, the Illuminati, the movers and shakers. My friend's a world scholar. He goes around all around the world. It's like a think tank. I mean, he's on a very high level. But you see, I don't want that.
What about for good, though? Using it for good. We mentioned the Illuminati. I mean, they just released a video like 2 days ago of one of the biggest pop stars in the world right now, a guy called The Weeknd. Somebody was filming his set, and on the screen behind him, it flashed the word Satan really fast, and they had it recorded, and they freeze-framed it. And so it's like they are getting power. There's a power out there. You can use it to tap into it for good or for bad. But you have to kind of pay homage to a god or a Thoth, or look at, you know, do we look at the people who've kind of went before us, or if we're talking about Crowley or these type of people? But I think, and it could be definitely used for bad. I think that's the most what we see going on, the Illuminati, things like that, seats of power. But I think it could be used for good too. Like if we follow that intuition, that spiritual guidance, because, and I link that to this because a lot of what you're talking about sounds like the pranayama spirit that's just permeating through all life, the kundalini, the Holy Spirit. It sounds very much like this in these encounters that people have had with the awakening of the kundalini, the baptism of the Holy Spirit. Feels like this intense fire. There's a fear there, but it's a good. It looks over their life, knows everything about you, loves you, it's okay, it cleans out all the wrong, and sets you on that life journey. And it sounds very similar to, that's why I have to bring this up with the UFO experiences, because if we're, to me, the UFOs are the angels of the holy books. That's just, the angels of the creators. What would you say to that?
Yeah, well, in Jungian psychology, you know, we have a body, there's a spirit, and there's the psyche, right, where we dream and have visions and out of the body and psychedelics, all of that. Now, that's not necessarily the dimensions. You know, the spirit's a dimension, the body's a dimension, but the psyche, what they call Maya, the illusory body, they say it can be like a size of a sesame seed, just a seed, or it can expand to fill the universe, like the Atma and the and Brahman and the Atma. So in a sense, the psyche is in one sense nothing and everything, right? So if in the psyche you meet entities, right? You meet entities. Now, they could be UFO entities, they can be angelic, they can be satanic. And I've met quite a variety. I've met hundreds of entities, mm-hmm. but I've never spoken to them or anything like that. So I'm in this powerhouse. I wake up in the middle of the night. I'm looking at my body, and above my body is a figure lying above my body, and it's the devil, right? So it's Satan. Now, in Steiner, Rudolf Steiner, Anthroposophy, he talks about the guardian of the threshold. I see it as the kundalini, right? So it's the awakening of the kundalini. But it's satanic. It has a dark force. So they call that Kali, the black goddess Kali. But it's lying above my body. And I think it's a beautiful looking being, right? It's a beautiful looking being. And so then I have another experience. I'm lying in bed. I'm not awake. I'm aware of myself as a fetus. I'm lying in the fetal position, and a hole appears in the top of my head, and my perception goes out of the hole at the top of my head. And I see like a sea of infinity, like blue and white waves going off into infinity. So I see that as the reptile. In fact, lizards and reptiles have a third eye. You can't see it. It's atrophied. It's there. It's there in the third eye. So in the ancient world, everybody worshipped the dragon, and that symbolizes the third eye. But it also symbolizes Draco, the pole star in Draco, mm-hmm. because that's your guide star. So when you travel by sea in the ancient world, everybody worshipped the dragon because that was your guide in the heavens. So when you look, you travel by sea or you travel, you're always looking for the pole star in Draco. Now, in the UFO community, you know, the reptilians have got a bad press.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had that particular point of view. Now, the point is that when I had my first awakening in Poughkeepsie and I dropped out of college and I felt I was in this different kind of dimension in the city, different dimension, that there was a terrible aspect to that. It was a very, very terrible aspect. But as you say, it was also euphoric. It was like double-edged. It was like good and evil. It was like yin and yang. So there was like a terrible thing. And yet at the same time, it could switch to something really euphoric, really ecstatic.
Yeah.
So I've always had that polarity in my self where, I don't take sides. I don't like to take sides in politics. I don't like to take sides in the alien agenda, the conspiracy theory. I like things to happen to me, good or bad. I take the rough and the smooth. I don't kind of like shy away from anything. I've gone very deep into things in myself. And I feel that's the fabric of the psyche. That's like these entities are really Maya. And I'm afraid that a lot of what people think about the UFO and entities is really, you might say, thought forms. And they're both revealing something to you, and yet they're not to be taken seriously. They're not the reality. They're not really to be confused with spirituality. Spirituality is one thing, that the spirit, nirvana, and whatever. And I think that people are taking sides, like reptilians versus Nordics.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. But I treat the angelic, I treat that kind of thing as entities.
Yes.
Who are revealing. They're bringing something to you to reveal something to you. And you've got to weigh things up. You've got to kind of like weigh the good and the evil. You've got to like the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Mm-hmm. You've got to kind of, and it says the tree is to be desired to make you wise. And the serpent is your guide. In the Gnostic tradition, the serpent is your guide. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the Tao, which is the way, that is the dragon path. That is actually called the dragon path because it's Draco. It's your lodestar. It's your lodestar. And in England, we call them ley lines.
Okay.
And I lived on the ley line when I had my first UFO experience in Oxford. It was on a ley line. It was on a dragon path.
So let me ask you this: when you're talking about being contacted by the UFOs, or getting that intuition to go look out the window, and there they are. I've had very similar encounters. Look up to the sky. Okay. You acknowledge that they're there. They kind of like wave at you, and then they're gone. And then there's a download. There's a knowing. There's an intrigue. There's an awe. And I think that promotes spirituality for me. I talked about it a little bit on Carrie's show on Project Camelot, where creativity like that, it lights something within you. And even the God thing for me, like there's some people who the existence of aliens or our creators or these entities that are out there that are good watching over us or exist on other planes of existence, to them, it kind of destroys their faith in God. But for me, it makes it more real. It makes it tangible that this isn't just a theory. These aren't, these stories that were passed down, and God isn't so far away that we can't interact with that realm, but they are watching over us. They're in outer space. They can come in and out of our dimension. There's so many layers to it. And so it builds my intrigue and almost gives credence to the beliefs that I have about spirituality, about God, about the ancient text, about the Bible, those type of things. It all kind of fits in there. But so when it comes to being contacted, and you said you've had open contact for a long time, that's one thing that comes with these experiences is open contact. And you mentioned being contacted. But have you done the work on the other side where you go out and there's a term called summoning UFOs. Have you ever went out and did a ritual, raised your hands, did a prayer, whatever the case is, and contacted them and they have appeared to you?
Yeah, well, as I say, that my first 1976 in Oxford, then I had my second, which was 1984, Now, if I go forward to, say, 94, I'm living in the north of England, in Lancaster, and I decide to go out. It's freezing cold in the winter. I go out, and the constellation that's closest to Britain that dominates the sky is Orion, right? So I went out. I didn't know anything about Orion at that time. So I look up into the sky, and there's Orion. And just in the corner of my eye, I see something near the roof of the house. I look up and there's a red orb the size of a basketball. So it's a red orb. It's about 10 feet away. And it's like a microphone, like mesh, you know, like a kind of thing. And it's just hovering there. And it moves very slowly, second by second, about 15 feet. And it just disappears. And I moved from there for maybe a year later. I moved back to Oxford for a short time to stay with my nephew. He's just finished university in artificial intelligence. So he's got a degree in artificial intelligence. He's got this place in Oxford. I spend some time there with him and I decide to go out on the porch. So I go out on the porch and there's this red orb again, this sphere right in front of me, and it's just hovering there. That's 200 miles away from the former one. And then I realize I'm being monitored, right? So that's and that's connected to me looking at Orion as well. I was actually spent time in a room just looking at Orion before that happened. So that would be my fourth. Then I moved down south near London, where I'm living now, and I decided to do a UFO watch from my window. So I opened my window, and Orion's up in the sky just above me. And what happened in the daytime, my friend who was is a professor of psychoanalysis, and he's, as I say, a world scholar on Jung and synchronicity, He went to Glastonbury, which is very occult center where the Arthurian legend is. When he was at Oxford University, he took a couple of years out and he got into Crowley, and he had the book Israel Regard is encyclopedia of the symbols of the Golden Dawn, that kind of thing. So I looked into the book. I thought, well, I'll look at a pentagram. I just thought I'd look at a pentagram. And I thought, well, I think I'll draw the pentagram outside the window. But when I had the thought to draw the pentagram outside the window, I had never practiced anything magical before. And I don't know why I did that. I literally don't. But when I get the feeling to do something like that, I just do it. So I go outside and I drew this pentagram on the floor in pastel. I think it was like a purple color. So 9 o'clock at night, I'm standing there, and just above me by the roof, only about 20 feet away, these five UFOs come over in pentagram formation. And they're like very slow. They're like hovering just above my head, and they're like five discs. And they were the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. They were golden orange. So they were like discs that were golden orange, and they seemed to be hovering just above my head. And they didn't have any dimension. So it's just like a kind of like pure light. So, and they seemed to be spinning, and they just went in front of me and over the pine trees and by the military base. So the military base plays an important part in my life. I was in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. That was a military base to do with nuclear warheads. And now I'm near a military base here, and the UFOs disappear near there, and it's on a hill. So this is on a hill. So I move into the place I am now. I move from there to here, and I'm sitting 11 o'clock at night, and five UFOs appeared near the castle, because when I'm looking out now, I can see the castle in my window, and these five UFOs appear in a vertical formation. They're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I look at them through my binoculars, and they look fairly solid, greeny, kind of red. And then they disappear one by one, and then this silver cylinder appears, this big silver cylinder. And I look at the silver cylinder, and they could have gone into the silver cylinder as a mothership, but I don't know. And then I watch it go down towards the ground. It goes down towards the ground, and it disappears where the military base is. It seems to go into the ground where the military base, this silver cylinder. That was my last experience in 2008. So, you know, you've got to weigh these things up. You've got to, like, take all that aboard.
Yeah.
And, you know, why are they doing, you know, you think of, what was the point of that? You know, like, I know about UFOs. Why wasn't something more revealed, if you know what I mean? You know, why?
That's why, because all of the encounters you've had, you've seemed like you've had a lot. I've had a decent amount as well. That changed my life. I mean, I'm doing this show. I'm pursuing this work now because of these encounters. And you would think that you would have more detail. You would know the agenda. You would know the names. That's why I always question a lot of the people who go on shows and they claim to have it all figured out. Like, the information is still slippery there. Like, I don't think, like, people, like, you're talking about the war between the Draconians and the Palladians and the, you know, Orion Council of Light are here to do this. People seem to have a lot of info, and for as much encounters that you've had and I've had, I would feel like, and I could tell that, you know, you're telling the truth. Some of these people, I think there's a lot of people who are just kind of making it up, and they're selling books, and they're, you know, they have an agenda there, and it's hard to trust them. Do you feel like that at all, too, without calling names or trying to sound harsh?
Yeah.
Because maybe they do. Maybe they have had that kind of contact. But as much contact as I've had, I can't just take it and run with it, you know?
Well, you know, in university, I studied philosophy and comparative religion. And I spent time in a Christian monastery. I met lamas. I met Krishnamurti, who was quite a famous guru. I had very important experiences with him on a kind of transcendental level, etc. Now, the point is that, you know, where's the ground? The thing I ask in all of this kind of phenomenon, where is the ground? Is, you know, like you say, the Bible, is it Buddhism? Well, you see, what we call religion is like a hijack. I see religion is a hijack of Buddha and Jesus, for example. Buddha and Jesus, nobody knows the background. They appeared on the scene. They came out of nowhere on the world scene, on the world stage. Jesus at 30, the Buddha at 36. Right? They just appear out of nowhere, and they have a small following of family friends. It's interesting. Both of them had family friends and a few intimates, right? So that was their first little circle, were family friends. So they must have been in the vicinity of their home. Now, it's interesting. There's a very famous yogi. The most famous yogi of Tibetan Buddhism is Milarepa. And Milarepa, his father died, and the uncle took over the property, and they just swindled the mother and the son out of the property. So the mother sent him away to be trained as a magician, and he was trained as a magician, and he had the power to bring hailstones. He could create hailstones, and he hailed. He hailed the house where his uncle was living, and it just absolutely smashed it to pieces. I remember reading that, because at that very moment, the hail came down in the middle of the summer outside the house. So it really, it was Wow, man, it just came
You're
right
talking
down.
Talking about synchronicity, man.
Yeah, that's the other thing. So Milarepa, what he did was he gave up being a magician. He came back to his hometown. He took up residence in a cave. And then he became enlightened. He became like he became part of a Buddha, you know, part of the, not the Buddha, but he took on the characteristics of a Buddha. So I'm saying there's a connection between, you know, being grounded where your home is. It's quite literal, you know, it's quite literal. You're not with some, like Krishnamurti, for example, and a lot of these gurus, they create a sect, live in the middle of nowhere, disconnected from everything, and live in this fantasy world.
Mm-hmm.
It is a fantasy world.
Yeah. If it has no tangible power, it definitely is. It's just theories.
But it's not
and
grounded. It's philosophy. Not grounded in knowledge. It's not grounded in books. It's not grounded in study. Now, all my experiences are grounded in study. I mm-hmm. studied everything going back to ancient Egypt, and I believe I've discovered a kind of Egyptian template. And it took 12 years between 2011 2003 to 2014, I published 9 books. Right, I've published 9 books, and they contain all the knowledge I gained out of my life on this planet. And I closed the book. So I no longer read books. I no longer take in information. I've closed the book. And now I'm learning to live. I'm learning to, like, live. If you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in the medium of knowledge. Now I'm not saying I'm trying to be wise, but I'm learning to be wise.
Yeah.
To what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I kind of look at it. I'm very similar situation where I don't do much reading either. Like, people send me all types of videos, and they want, I've had some of Jordan Maxwell's people offer to send me external hard drives with like 4 terabytes of videos and documentaries and information. I don't want it. Like, I'm kind of like you as far as like trying to, and this is where I put it, asking for wisdom on how to share the knowledge that we've already studied. How can we bring this into practical experience for ourselves and for people to better the world around us? And so as far as like digging and reading and studying and researches, now I'm all for experience. I love having a spiritual encounter. But as far as like just trying to dig to get to the bottom of it, I've seen so much as it is. So it's like asking for the wisdom on how to share the knowledge. Does that ring true?
Yeah. Well, I'll go into that now. Right. The world around us, what we call society, which I've never been a part of. I've never played the game. I've never played the mind game, right, of politicians, of people that run institutions, all of that kind of stuff. You know, we're immersed in language, aren't we? Consciousness is like language, knowledge, language. We're language, we're cultural entities. We're human, we're selves, we're a self that's come into a body. And what I call consciousness is like a toolkit. It's a toolkit. There's a reason why we have this toolkit. And you won't find that reason in a book, because the book itself is the tool, is the toolkit. So everyone's got their language. In the family, you've got your secret language. In the politics, you've got your sub rosa behind closed doors. You've got the secret language in the Masons. Everybody's got their secret language, right? So the UFO, they've all got their little pockets of secret language, right? What is the language? What is this language of the human being? Now, see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We're moving outside of what we think language is to what is language. What are we supposed to know? We're here. You're here for what? 100 years now. We've basically lived to 100 years. What are we here for? 7 billion people. What on earth are we doing here? To go to the moon, to build an AI computer, to paint the Sistine Chapel, to build the pyramids. No, we're not here. I don't think we're here for that. That's a symbol of what we're here for. But what are we really here for? That's the wrapping. What's inside the wrapping? That's what I'm trying to discover. That's what I'm trying to open up now.
Do you feel like this is some type of testing ground?
Well, you
of right and wrong and trying to figure things out, and almost like, you know, the life you live determines the place that you spend eternity, if you want to call it that.
Well, you see, you can talk about the planetary fates and karma and character and type. So we're all types. I'm an artist. I'm a poet. I'm a philosopher. I can be all those types, right? That's the entity. Reptilians are types. Nordic are types. All these types.
Mm-hmm. Right?
They all embody language and knowledge, don't they? They're all sharing. They want you to buy into that knowledge, buy into this knowledge, buy this brand, buy this, right? And I'm saying that people have their concept of a secret language. People want to know, think they've got some real, you know, real language. They mean what they say. They're telling the truth. They really mean what they say. But if you don't have the truth, how can you speak the truth? What is the truth? You know, so my question is, I'm 73 the other day.
Happy birthday, belated.
Right. Question mark is, at my age now, wisdom is truth. If wisdom is truth, what is that truth? And who's going to reveal it? Some entity? Or is there a Buddha and Jesus? You see, who were Buddha? Where did they come from? What did they discover in their cave, in their temple, in their whatever? And why did they come on alone? Why were they alone when they came on the world stage? You know, they appeared to be alone. And yet immediately the family's there and the few people are there. It's a very interesting kind of conundrum. Because they're coming out of nowhere, which means something. I think it, like Nirvana, you know, Nirvana is supposed to be empty, and yet you have a diamond body. You have a diamond body, you have a body of wisdom, the Dharmakaya, and yet it's supposed to be empty. And the Tibetan Buddhists say Nirvana isn't the end. You don't just get enlightened and sit in no man's land. That's only the beginning. You're a free individual. You've dropped your karma. You drop your conditioning. You drop your whatever. And now you can be a free human being and travel the dimensions. That's what they say. Whereas a lot of Buddhists say, no, you get, Zen Buddhism, you get Satori, and that's the end of the journey. You've finished. But in Tibetan Buddhism, you're only beginning with your body of wisdom. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're at the end and you pack everything in. You're only beginning the journey, which is eternity.
That's
so
good.
We've got mm-hmm. this paradox between infinity. We live in an infinite universe. And yet we've got this concept of eternity, the circle, the one, the unknown God, the invisible God. And that power that I talked about, I did experience that. I've experienced that. I wrote it in my book, The One Mind, 3 months of being in Satori, emptiness, nirvana. I have experienced that.
And after you've experienced that, you walk around with a heightened sense of awareness, right? For sometimes, the things you see, like you said, you felt like you was in a dream state, like the things were different. You looked at things, they seemed different. Your consciousness was shifted. I've known people who they would vibrate, their bodies would, they would get, I think what they call in the Hindu tradition, kriyas, where their body, they would get these jerks of energy throughout the day in their body. And I knew guys in mid conversation would start shaking, from an encounter that they had a week ago, and they're still vibrating off of that frequency from that experience.
Yeah, well, that would be one of the seven chakras, you see. But if you go out through the hole in your head, you go out, then you're in this emptiness. I mean, I looked out when I had that experience of the thousand petaled lotus, my perception, what they call consciousness transference mm-hmm. in the Tibetan, in the secret doctrine of the Tibetans. And I looked out, so I did see the infinity. I did see something, and I came back in. But where I am now, where I'm sitting in this room now, I had in 2015, I had a 3-month experience, and I kept a journal every day, a diary every day, and although the world around me was the same, you know, like just sitting in this room, looking outside at the castle. It wasn't the same world, but it wasn't the Gothic world. It wasn't the shadow world. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like the magical world. It was like purity. It was like a pure space. So that when I look at the room now and the outside, it's lit up. You know, the light and the sky is all lit up. So you have light and space. But being in Satori, Nirvana, it's not that space. It's not time and space. It's around it. It's like there's a different dimension of space that isn't bound to time and space.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have a limit. So it's not like limited by the trees or the sky or anything material. That would be the same as I experienced before what I called the power. You know, so before I wasn't ready for the power, but it's given it me in small doses. It's not the power, like Buddha was connected to the power.
It's an expression of that power, would you say that?
Yeah, it's not a symbol. It's not in my psyche. It's not in my
consciousness. It's a lesser form, like the Shekinah, what the Hebrews would call the Shekinah glory, a tangible presence, but not the presence itself, almost just like beholding a piece of it. Like you said, talking about the reflection of the moon and seeing that image, yeah. which is the light of the sun expressed through the moon, and we get that light and you walk with that. Because many people say that if you was to go directly to the supreme power, that you would surely die. I mean, we look at the Ark of the Covenant, which carried the presence of God, and if anybody touched it who wasn't worthy, they would instantly die. I mean, and even having that strong encounter from an expression of the source was so profound. There's more, right?
Yeah. So, the concept of the one in the Egyptian model, the concepts of the one Thoth, he's not in the universe. He's the grand architect of the Masons. He's the grand architect, right? So he doesn't really exist as we call it in this universe. He's not in existence. And it's just a principle called the one, but you could say the one is Nirvana. It's the one mind. It's empty. It's nothing. Because when you're approaching it through knowledge or culture or science, it really is nothing. So what's before the Big Bang? Well, nothing. But it's not nothing.
Yeah.
It's not nothing compared to something. Mm-hmm. It's not the corollary of something. The scientists want something else, don't they? They want a kind of like the mind of God, you know, the God gene, what they call the God gene.
God or
the
particle, mind of God. Yeah.
But you see, Nirvana isn't that kind of nothing. It's not that, it's here right now. The nothing is actually here right now. I'm talking to you and I'm very much in my consciousness using language, but I'm also aware of that, of the emptiness.
I think that's where meditation comes in. That we are able to kind of shut everything down and kind of go back to that essence, get a glimpse of it, to kind of take it with us, to kind of remind us who we are, where we came from. One thing I wanted to talk to you about is the importance, I think, of stargazing. You said that when you were having some encounter stargazing, gazing into Orion, and then things would happen. People ask me, you know, how do I have more synchronicities? How do I get on the spiritual path? What do I do? The three things I tell them is begin reading literature, reading books that are about people who have had encounters like that, or some of the information that's come before us. I say read, spend time in meditation and in prayer to kind of reflect on what you're reading and touch the divine, kind of get with that source energy, and stargazing. I always tell them stargazing. For me, that's just like that communication. I've spent hours stargazing, and like you, I've gazed into Orion and seen starships and seen entities coming in and out of Orion or just being focused, and then out of the peripheral, other beings will come into play and begin to see all of this stuff just by simply quieting down and gazing at the stars. There's something to that. Are you there, David, or did you lock up? You might have locked up.
Yeah.
Okay. So what would you say is the power of stargazing? Are we making connection when we do that? I mean, that with the entities who dwell in that star system? I mean, what's going on when we gaze into Orion, or we gaze into, you know what I'm saying, the Pleiades, and we feel energy, we feel downloads? I've gazed so intently before, I felt like I was being sucked out of my body, and I had to catch myself, and it scared me. It really did.
Yeah, I've had that experience looking... No, there's a meadow in Oxford, and I used to go to this big meadow and just lie down, and I felt I'd be taken out of my body, which again, it's not happened to me. I think it's a matter of orientation. You know, if you're a spiritual person, they call that in Gurdjieff's term, the guy called Gurdjieff, he calls it the magnetic center. In alchemy, and you call it the lodestone. It's a magnetic stone. And as I say, the pole star is a magnetic star. So, you know, it's aligned to the Earth's axis. It's aligned there. So the very first pyramid, the step pyramid, which a lot of my work's based on, I've had certain things revealed to me. But that's aligned to the pole star, Draco. So it's an alignment. It's like you're aligning, like the ley line, the dragon path, the Tao, being in the Tao, being synchronicity, what they call the law of correspondences, the sympathy of all things. It's being intimate. You know, it's like feeling intimate. You know, if you go for a walk and there's birds and trees or people you like, it's an intimacy. I think that's a very important spiritual quality. Is like intimacy, mm-hmm. being receptive, you know.
Connected.
Connected. It's vulnerable, being vulnerable as well. Because vulnerable, you think if you're open to people, open to world, you can be hurt because you're vulnerable. And in a way, you know, the terrible aspect of the Godhead, which is the numinous, the terrible aspect of the Godhead, you know, even the evil aspect is part of it, is part of the drama. You know, so I've never closed off. I've not dabbled or anything in magic in that way. But I'm saying that when you're being intimate, yes, you can be a bit afraid. Of course, your instincts, you're afraid and you want a good experience. And, you know, you've got a whole kind of cornucopia of it, mm-hmm. of reactions. But if you've got the right intention, and you're building on something, there's got to be something there. You've got to have confidence in yourself that there's something there in yourself. You know, there's got to be a place, hasn't there, a place you can go to in yourself. And that's what meditation is.
Yeah.
Meditation is really a communion with the spirit. So if you're in communion with the spirit, the world opens itself to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I would describe it. I've never meditated myself, but...
Well, it's a form. If you're stargazing, I think that's a form of meditation.
Yeah. I'm saying if you're an artist and you go into the studio and there's a blank canvas, that moment, that's the nirvana, that's the white room in the way, that's the white square, nirvana, emptiness. have you got the energy, the courage, the confidence to make a mark? You know, and like the cave paintings, they went in there, didn't they? And they made the mark. They scratched and made the mark. So I'm saying that, you know, being open and what I would call the act of creation. You know, there are always acts of creation, synchronicities, UFOs. They're acts of creation. They're coming out of actual creation. They're coming out of nothing, what we call nothing, which the scientists don't believe in. But we know it's real. And once you've had one experience, then you've got it, haven't you? Once you've had one thing,
it's enough to start it. It's enough to get bit by the bug. You get bit. The bug bites you.
Yeah, but once you've got it, it's not going to go away.
No, I don't think it ever does. Some people turn it off, you know, people that we get busy, you know, things happen, consciousness shift, things change. I wish I did. Like, I wish I still had as many encounters as I used to. It's been a while since I've had a profound UFO encounter, and I was at a place where I was having them daily, like making contact daily. Now it's like I'm reflecting on what the hell was it? Like, what is it? And trying to talk to people and stuff. And then the information and knowledge from the research and even from the meditation or seeing the UFOs. It's not just about seeing something. I think people see stuff all the time, but communicating with it, connecting with it, and getting downloads of information and energy, that's a whole nother level. That's a whole nother thing that we're bringing to the table. And so, it's not about continuing to have the experience. It's about dissecting it. And what does it mean to you? I think it's a disservice just to keep wanting more. I want another one. I want another experience. I want to see something else. Like, you've been privileged to see so much. You have to do something with the information. I mean, there's people, you know, who like chase after psychics and prophets and stuff like that. And I used to do that. Go to services where you want someone to speak over you a prophetic word about your life, and then the next week you want somebody else to do it, and you're just chasing this versus like, or even with the psychedelic experience, you want all of these psychedelic experiences, but you haven't done the work and the information that has come through. You have to dissect it and apply it to your life to go deeper. That's what's working for me. I've had those encounters, and I'm trying to make the changes and the adjustments to my life. And when I do, the information that comes through has been profound. It's been life changing about, like you said, something, whether you want to call it God or the universe or the ETs or whatever, or if something is watching over us, it's communicating with us, and it has an agenda or a path for us, like a life purpose to affect people, to bring about good, to bring about change. And I've seen it in my own life, and I think it's very tangible and it's very beautiful.
Yeah. All right, so we're in a body, right? We're born, you know, we're in a body. We don't have much memory of what happened before. So we're in a body and we're a self. So 7 billion people, we're selves in bodies, right? And we've got this toolkit consciousness. The spirit doesn't connect through consciousness. The spirit connects to you, right? So the spiritual awakening is a communion, a one-to-one communion, almost self-to-self in the Buddhist sense, Hindu sense, the small self with the big self. It's self-to-self. That's what I'm saying. It never goes away. Once that communion, once you've reestablished connection with the source.
The inward dialogue.
Yeah. Wherever you've come from, as it were, into the body, you've reconnected. And then consciousness has to do something about it, right? So you've got people that don't have that contact with their self or with God or whatever you want to call it, and they live in consciousness, they live in the matrix, they live in what the Buddhists call conditioning, Maya. So they're chasing their own tail. They're playing themselves. They're like playing an artificial robot at chess, you know. They're playing the game. They're really playing their own mind game. They're playing against themselves in chess. So we're all playing against ourselves. And I'm saying that the spiritual awakening, the the self-to-self, the one-to-one, isn't about consciousness. But we're here, so we have to, you might say, represent that communion, which is without knowledge. We've got to translate it into knowledge. So we have what you call genius. So the genius translates what he's, you know, she's inspired to say, or poetry or music. It's come out of nowhere and they express it. And that direct kind of expression, that creative expression, is again like an act of creation. It's coming out of nowhere. And what happens with the establishment, the authority, the people that run the society, I call, you know, it's called cultural capital. They don't love music and love art. They want the product. They want the brand to make more money. They hijack the creative artists, and they have patrons, mm-hmm. right? So you know, the Vatican's the patron in the Renaissance, and then you've got like people, you know, paying lip service. Well, I've never bought into that. My art, nobody's seen my, very few people have seen my art, because I'm not going to play that game. You know, and like I'm on Amazon, I publish my books on Amazon. I put my pictures on Facebook and so forth and so on, and show a few friends. But I'm not going to bow down to any authority that's going to hijack the meaning of my life. You know, the meaning of my life is to be in contact with the spiritual, to be creative, and to be independent, to be free. And I'm not going to play that game. I'm not going to play against myself, because mm-hmm. when we play against ourselves,
you sell yourself out. It's hard to get it back. Yeah. We look at Prince, look at his story, man. You know, and essentially what happened to him, and him changing his name into a symbol because they owned everything that he put out, and they had, you know, they could approve or disprove songs, you know, and maybe the stuff he wanted to put out, they wouldn't release it. And that's happened with a lot of people having to change their message or even selling their story to a network. I mean, if we're talking about ufology, let's look at the movie Fire in the Sky. You know, what's his name? He sold his story. And they totally misrepresented it, and it made it like a horror movie, essentially, when it was something in the end beautiful. And he's working out there now doing the circuits to kind of undo what that movie has done, you know?
Yeah.
And they want to change it. So I talked to James Gilliland too, and he's one who who's out there on the front lines of the contactee experiences and initiating contact as well. And he's been approached to sell his story, but he won't, because they try to put the horror bend on it. That genre sells. I mean, there's, you know, I went and seen a horror movie the other day, but it was good. There was an awesome message in it about psychic abilities. I seen the new Insidious movie, and took my daughter to see it. It is horror because there's jump scares and stuff like that. But as far as they did a really good job in that movie of tying in receiving messages from the other world, of being a psychic and being downtrodden and abused by your parents and laughed at, but still seeking after that. So there's people now with that art and creativity, they're still tying these beautiful messages in with the genre. I think like entertainment is so powerful. I do music about my art and my experiences. I'm taking these really delicate spiritual encounters and putting them in a song and trying to articulate it in a way that it sounds intriguing, and it almost builds an altar or a monument of these encounters that I've had. And other people, you know, when I talk about reading books and information, listening to music that promotes this type of stuff, a lot of stuff. So other people who are listening to my songs about my encounters, they're finding themselves having these encounters with UFOs and spirits and meditation and things like that. So something with the synchronicity, everything ties together. You know, once you start giving your attention to it, you start noticing it in everything, and something's guiding you, something's leading you to everything you're doing. Some people never realize that, though. Some people are just on that study mode, and they never come to this inward knowing that it's about spirituality. It's about treating others well. They just they want knowledge. They want to have the information, but there's no connection to the spirit realm there at all for them.
Yeah, it's a matter of networking, isn't it? You know, it's
supernatural,
like,
networking.
Because you got the Matrix. I've never seen the Matrix. I don't watch films, but I've not seen the Matrix.
But you know the concept. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but obviously they talk about the prism planet and mm-hmm. AI is, you know, something is kind of.
It's talking about Maya too. You know, the veil of the unseen realm that. Or this realm that we see is just a shadow and it's just kind of not real, you know? It's the world to come. That's the real world.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the things that we see around us, what we call history, and even the pyramids, you know, it's a language. I mean, in the end, everything in consciousness is a language and everything's coded, what I call the symbolic code. But in the world, when we go to university and go to school and all of that, that's one kind of code. There's a propaganda, an indoctrination, and that kind of conditioning, and so you got that level of programming, which is what we see on the television and what we call society. But there's a meta programming, like say the Bible. You know, you've got a person, Jesus, and some people going around in their local city or town or something like that, and then you've got this secret code, you've got this meta programming, this mythic, symbolic, magical language kind of in there. And, you know, looking at it, if you just look at it like the Bible or any other text, the Book of the Dead, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, it's just a riddle. It's like the riddle of the Sphinx. I mean, it's just a very, very complicated, very messy. It's a very messy language. You know, when you read poetry, in a way, it's not easy for the conscious mind. When you read poetry, you've got to switch. You've got to go from the conscious mind, which is like ego-based and controlling everything. You've got to let go. You've got to kind of fall into the poetry, don't you? You fall into the music, and you've got to navigate. So there is a kind of secret code within yourself. You can navigate this dark night of the soul, this matrix, and whatever you want to call it. And as I say, it's like my very first memory, at 2 years old, is looking at a red fire engine, right? So my favorite toy was a red fire engine. So my memory is just looking at this red fire engine. And something revealed that to me, and I interpret that as the chariot of fire. So the fire engine becomes the chariot of fire becomes the UFO. So at the age of 4 years, you know, I have this seeming abduction. So I'm saying that, you know, your life story is encoded, metaprogrammed with mythology and symbol and magic. And it's making the connection. You could live your whole life and not reflect on that level. But it's there. It's actually there. You know, the flowers in the garden. Or maybe your father, like my father, used to read detective books and cowboy, you know, that kind of American pulp fiction. You know, it could be anything that contains this symbolic knowledge for you.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you could live your whole life and not realize that something in your front room when you were a child, or some person you met, or some place you went to, there was something telling you something, but you just didn't see it. You just didn't, like, listen.
Yeah, that's so true. That's a fear. And I think that's what, You always want people to experience what you haven't experienced and encountered. You want everybody to know what you know. I mean, just look at vegetarians, look at vegans. You know, they've got the answer. They found the antidote, and then they're going to go around and tell everyone and proselytize. And even with, you know, Christians or any type of religion, you're going to go out and say, hey, I have the truth. You need to know this, what I know. And so essentially what we're doing, just kind of having this conversation, sharing the stories, For many people, it already rings true. They've already had that inward knowing, that self-reflection. And for those who haven't, it's available. We're just letting them know that it's there. And it's just sad that people never encounter that. I mean, I have family members who, you know, who have had a hard life. You know, I've had a hard life, too. But just to see them still continue to go on that path, that destructive path, when the path of goodness is there, too. Like this self realization, learning from your mistakes, learning from the mistakes of others, all of it's there, but some of them will never experience that. It's sad to fathom. It's sad to think of. I do believe in happy endings. I do believe that we could be happy and experience that, and I want that for everyone. But David, I appreciate you coming on the show, hanging out with me, bro. Do you want to share your links where people can contact you? I don't know if you have a website, but you've got a lot of interviews that you've done. You're also active on Facebook and things like that, if you want to share your links out.
Yeah, I've got a YouTube channel, and you can get, I think I've got about a playlist of nine now on my YouTube channel. I'm on Facebook and Amazon. My books are on Amazon, and my email is david.sr.curtis@outlook.com, and you know, you can find me in those places.
David, I've enjoyed hanging out with you, brother. Well, let's do it again soon if we can, man.
Okay, nice seeing you.
All right, thank you, bro.
Yeah, see you. Bye.
Bye-bye. David Curtis, ladies and gentlemen. Awesome. Good stuff. Enjoyed that conversation a lot. When we're talking about that stuff, man, I think talking about those experiences, those encounters and stuff like that, I think that is part of what initiates it. We're talking about people who want to have those encounters in their life. We're talking about how do you do it? Stargazing. There's something that's connected there. Thank you guys for hanging out with me. I'm going to try to get to some of these questions here in the chat room. Phone lines are open if anybody wants to call in. Feel free to use that technology that we have. But let's see. So Ray asked me a while ago. I did see that come by in the chat. You asked me if I've ever done Stephen Greer's meditation. I have. It's a good meditation. We used to do that CE5 initiative meditation before going out to stargaze and trying to make contact. We'd kind of get in that heightened state of awareness. And I remember doing it with a friend of mine out in the field. We were sitting in a vehicle first and getting relaxed, getting into the meditative state before we went into that meditation. And I know it was so funny because you can tell, like, he was reading, and then you could tell that he was turning the pages. And so there was just, we would always laugh. We'd hear him breathe, and then it was just so raw. And he's reading, and you can hear the pages of his book that he's reading his meditation out of. It was just hilarious. But that's my memories of doing the CE5 meditation from Stephen Greer. But we definitely did do that. Christy Folk, she asked earlier, she said she wants to be a part of what we're doing with the School of the Mystics, but she isn't able to do it on Thursday nights. There's a lot of people, I've been getting this message a lot of people who support, a lot of people who want to be a part of what we're doing on Thursday nights, but they can't because of a job or, you know, the family things going on. And when they have time to kind of get away, it's during work hours, listening to the podcast, driving, whatever the case is. So I wasn't going to record those because they've been really candid and stuff and personal, but I'm going to record them, and they're going to be available for the patrons. So it'll be in the patron section, essentially, because we're doing a course. And if anybody comes in at any time in the course, maybe we have, you know, five sessions under our belt, you can go back and listen to them. They're going to be really short sessions that we're doing. The teachings anywhere are short, so we're going to do the short teaching of the course, and then we're going to do the Q&A and the group discussion that's in the book. So it's about starting the prophetic ministry, and a lot of it is basics for me, elementary stuff, but I think it's good to brush up on elementary stuff even for me, and there could be some things I haven't learned because this is somebody else's course. There's a bunch of them we could choose from, but we're going to start here and see how it goes. And so it's going to be something that we're building with the community Thursday nights at 7 p.m. with the School of the Mystics. So you'll be able to listen to that at your own leisure. So if you are a patron, you'll get access to that too. So I wanted to make sure I let that know that it will be recorded now. Yeah, man, I've had a pretty interesting week this week, guys. I mentioned it at the end of the last podcast, man. I don't know how much to just really go in on this. We've been talking about this a lot lately. I was on Christy Lee's show last night, and we talked about it a little bit. But just to kind of keep you guys up to speed, like, I did a contest for a song. I wrote a song, submitted it to this contest that Tariq Bibby put out, ended up winning first place. It was a theme song. It was about starseeds who feel misplaced and who are going through a rough time on the earth and then kind of finding healing or finding their calling in the end. So I wrote this song. It's available on Patreon as well. You can download it. It's called Scars, and it's about a girl. It's about a guy going through life and being an outcast, being rejected, not fitting in at school, those type of things. And then he talks about pill addiction and stuff like that. And then the second verse is about a girl, kind of same experience, not fitting in at school, being picked on, made fun of, and things like that. And then at the end, they find each other, they run away together, and they find healing. And it's, I sum it up in a song. I did that song, put it out there for the contest. I won first place. I won $1,000. Praise God. It was awesome. It came through at perfect time, right when I needed it for bills and that type of stuff. So really a God thing that I won. And I knew, funny thing is, I knew I was going to win. Like, when because I woke up with those lyrics in my head. Like, I got the song from spirit, 100%. So I woke up out of sleep and had these lyrics in my head, just the beginning of it, to sit down and do it, and it just started flowing. Won first place. One guy was upset that I won because he submitted a song. The song was not good. His singing was off key, all of this stuff, but he insisted that he should have been the winner, and it got really weird. This guy was messaging me. The guy who did the contest, Tariq, had to block this guy because he's talking about pressing charges, just crazy stuff. This guy who claims that he was supposed to be the winner of the contest and the song was bad. I wanted to tell him that it was bad. I wanted to tell him that he should have got somebody else to sing it because he was off key, you know, but I didn't. I had the message typed up and I was going to send it to him because he was like accusing me or accusing the contest of being rigged and all kind of weird stuff, you know. So that happened with the contest. And then on top of that, a close friend of mine went through some weird psychosis. He's been going through this thing for a long time, actually, doing really weird stuff on social media. I mean, going live on Facebook and getting naked, like taking off his clothes and saying, "America, I stand before you as a naked man, naked before you, naked before God. I hold nothing back." And he'd get naked and put the camera on his face where you couldn't see it. He's sitting there naked on live stream. This dude, he's on drugs and stuff. And he's a good friend of mine, man. He's got a calling on his life. I've seen God use him. He's talented. He plays all kind of instruments. He raps. He sings. He's awesome, man. But he's just in a bad place on some really hard drugs and involved with some dark spirits, man. And well, anyway, this guy reached out to me after all that stuff about getting naked. And he made death threats to his baby mama and his daughter on Facebook Live. He said he was going to kill him, give him back to God. Crazy stuff. He reached out to me and said, "Congratulations on the song. You did good, my brother. I'm not even going to ask you for what you owe me. Half of the money." It's like, what? He said, "Yep, you owe me half of the money. That song was inspired by me, and I actually wrote that song. And I gave you the knowledge and all this to write that song." And I was like, I didn't even entertain it. I was like, man, this dude, shout out. This dude, he's on some crazy stuff to come at me sideways like that on something that I created. You know what I'm saying? That's just insane. This is the stuff you go through when your mind is on some of these hard drugs. And he just insisted, man. He just kept on and on. And then he started blowing me up, calling me. I wasn't answering because I was busy at the moment. you need to answer right now. Your life is in jeopardy. I was like, oh my God. You know, here's one of the crazies coming out the woodwork. Bad thing is, I really believe in this guy, man. I can see the potential in him. Anyway, I finally answered the phone. I said, bro, I'm watching a movie with my wife. What's up? Blah, 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 blah. He just went off on some crazy stuff. And you owe me $500. You want $1,000? I want my money. Like, dude, you're insane, bro. And I just told him, look, you need to get off the drugs. You need to get clean. I love you. Bye. And I just blocked him from all social media, blocked his phone number, all that stuff. So then for he goes and does this long Facebook rant on me and tries to post it in the Patreon, or not Patreon group, but in my on my public group that I have, True Seekers Friends, on Facebook, and this long thing talking about I'm a Judas and I stole from him. Crazy. Crazy stuff. And then he started going to all my friends, just telling them crazy stuff about me. We got to quit following True Seeker. He's using magic. He's left God. He's following magic. And like, he's going to all my friends, just having these private discourses with them. And the weird thing is like, a lot of people entertained it, you know? And I think, you know, and that's the weird thing when it comes to psychology and understanding why people are trying to rationalize with a drug addict. You know, me too. I put myself in the mix. I see the potential in this guy. Like, I see, you know, he's an awesome artist. Like, people pray and fast for his talent. Like, they long to write a song. They long to be able to play the guitar, be able to sing and rap. And like, this guy has got so much talent, it's oozing out of him. But he's in a bad place right now, man. So we're just gonna pray for him. I've been praying for him, but it got to the next level. He started sending me death threats. He started telling my friends that he was going to stop at nothing to honor his ancestors and kill me. And his ancestors will get glory out of my downfall, and just craziness. So I reached out to this lady, the mother of the girl he was threatening, because they had a whole deal on it as well, threatening to kill him and kill his daughter. And so I reached out to her. I was like, look, if you guys had any luck going to the police with this guy, because all my friends were messaging me like, dude, you got to be careful with this dude. He's crazy right now. He may show up at your house, blah, 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 this kind of stuff. So I hit the lady up. She said he was supposed to go to court yesterday. He never showed up. You know, they got 3 warrants on him. You know, she told me to call the cops just so I can, you know, let them know what's going on, that it would help this case, because they got warrants on him. He didn't show up for court for threatening these people, and he got gun charges and all kind of crazy stuff. Anyway, I didn't call, but then just a few hours later, she posted an update. She posted an update saying he was locked up. So they had this picture of him, you know, all cracked out and stuff in jail, and it's like, it's insane. You gotta be careful, man. This is real. I'm reading the the comments at the same thing, man. And so Jared says, man, you should prepare. Hey, we got guns, bro. We got guns. Trust me. We're prepared. We're ready. Ready for whatever. The weird thing is, like, a lot of once you reach a level of notoriety, once you get a big enough platform, a lot of people come out the woodwork. But then again, you know, you got to see if you're catering to these people, if you're enabling these people, those type of things. But it's not just me. We like to say, because we talk about spirituality, we're open to so much stuff. And trust me, I get those messages from crazy people who listen to the show and listen to my music, and they resonate with me. And this made, I think I've even had somebody else say that they felt like they wrote my lyrics or something. I don't, you know what I'm saying? Like, just crazy. I have people hitting me up telling me that the Illuminati and the Masons told them that they were supposed to be my wife and marry me. And I've had my friends' wives who I've never met, just friends online, and their wife will secretly message me that they want to be together. Just crazy stuff that goes on, and it comes with the territory, man. And you want to think, it's like, okay, what are you doing, True Seeker, that creates a breeding ground for these people? Why do these people feel comfortable with coming to you? I see the potential in a lot of people. Like, even with this guy, I see potential in him. And I feel like I hope that he gets cleaned up. And I prophesy that over him, that he will, man. And I want that for him. I think everybody deserves to have a happy ending, man. But I'm done with him. You can't threaten my life or my family and then think you're going to come back and hang out and be friends. I'm done with him on that tip. But there's a line that you can't cross. You can't take back your words, man. You have to be careful. You can't undo it. Hey, I was just playing, man. I was in a bad spot. Okay, I forgive you, but you got to stay away. You got to stay where you are. You can't be trusted. You know, there's those people. Sometimes you have to cut people off. Sometimes you have to get people out of your life, man. Some people are dangerous. The spirit of jealousy, man. I have a lot of friends over the years who have been jealous of my platform. They think that they deserve it. They think that they're more spiritual. They think that they have the right knowledge to share with the masses of this platform that I've built, and they're jealous. I don't deserve the platform. They do. Like, I've had people there, and they do little stuff like that guy, as far as like messaging all my friends and say, hey, stay away from True Seeker. He's a fake. He's a false prophet. He's leading people astray. Like that type of, like, people have inboxed him. I've had people do that, inbox all my friends, and then call me and have a conversation with me, accusing me, and then I'm able to kind of shed some light on whatever you know, nonsense they're entertaining in their head, and I win them over. And they're like, you know what, man? I'm sorry, bro. And they go back and they message all the people again, and they apologize and say, you know what, I was wrong about True Seeker, this. I've had that happen a bunch, especially with church people. But, you know, creating a safe haven for these people to thrive in the spirituality, the new age, whatever you want to call it. Like, there's a lot of people who are out there, you know, but guess what? I come from Christianity and the Christian church. And guess what? There's a breeding ground for that too, there in the prophetic movements and stuff. And so this is just a warning, just so everybody get up on their game. Like, we have to really be walking in the spirit of discernment with what we're entertaining and with people, and we allow people to speak into our lives. And that dude reached out to a lot of people. It was weird. The whole thing is just weird in general, that one person would have that much power to go on there and do that and stir up as much stuff as they could. And we have to be careful of the stuff we're entertaining, and we're letting these people. We have to move in the spirit of discernment. It was said a long time ago that the guy who led me to the Lord years ago, he went to church, and then there was the guy who came, and he asked him to come to church. So he came and checked out the church, and it was like, man, and then he told him, he said, look, you guys claim to be spiritual. You guys are talking in tongues, praying in the Holy Spirit, healing people, dancing in the church. You guys are just getting into the spirit of God, but you can't even move in the gift of discernment. He said, what are you talking about? He said, you have registered sex offenders in the church, and you're letting your kids run around because it's a community effort. You're letting your kids run around, and your kids are sitting in the laps of registered sex offenders, and you guys cannot even discern it. You don't even know that, but you're so spiritual, you're so deep, you're so connected with God, or hearing God, or God told me this, you know, these type of things, but you can't discern the pedophiles and registered sex offenders in your church, and your kids are sitting in their lap, and they're sitting on their knees, and they're, you know, playing with the kids in the church. And so that really punched him, man. It hit home with him, and he shared that with me, and it always rang true to me, because I've known stuff like that too, of just these people who go to church and they're accepted. And you know, I've seen, trust me, man, like I've seen so much. There's a lot of delusional people in churches too. There's a lot of them in the New Age movement. There's a lot of them in Islam. Look at what these guys are doing. These people are killing themselves over their religion and killing other people and doing harm to other people, racist people, people in the Ku Klux Klan, Black Hebrew Israelites, like on every aspect, there's extremists out there. And it's about just trying to find balance and trying to find peace and harmony and be that light unto the world. Like, that's essentially what it's about. But in the midst of that, we have to be careful. We have to use discernment. Pray for discernment. That's a spiritual gift. Like, in your spirit, you can know that, hey, this isn't right. God will tell you stuff about people. I mean, that's what we're going to be speaking on School of the Mystics tonight, is how to hear that voice of God in your life for what people are going through. Business decisions, relationship decisions, like hearing God, being able to discern the spirits that are on other people. Like, you can do that. That's part of it. It's very practical. It's practice. This isn't just theories and cool stuff or what if it's real. No, this stuff is real. It's tangible. And if it's not, if you can't apply it to your life, if it cannot help you or the people around you, then I really don't want to talk about it. And so there's somewhat of a tangible experience in each every one of these interviews that I do. I try to take something from it. I mean, even this discussion with David Curtis today, it's like this guy's 73 years old. And to see where he is and to see his life's path, very similar to mine. Like those experiences he's had and the conclusions he's come to, and it still seems like he's just still seeking, like, now what is the thing? Like, what's the absolute? I think I found the absolute. Like, I think I know what it's about. For me, it's simply knowing God and making him known. Letting people know about this gospel that God loves you and he's got a plan for you and you can encounter God, that you have a purpose for your life and a plan for your life. And in that and through that, there's so much other stuff. Whatever your life calling is to be, whatever you desire to do with your life, all of that stuff is kind of woven throughout that message. But the message is an empowerment of the good news, man. And so that you're not alone, right? And so, like, that's my end all. Like, that's my agenda in the midst of having these conversations with people, is to share my story and see how it relates and really get deep down into the essence of the mind, of the psyche, and what people are going through, and people who need help. People like this guy who sent me death threats and stuff like that. I try to put myself out there, you know. I try to put myself, and I have discernment with them. That's my problem, and not just me, but most of the people I run with in my circle, is that we have compassion for others. We know that the churches have kicked these guys out. We know that they've been booted from society and they're outcasts. But hey, those are the people that God uses, man. So we have a compassion for them, and because we've been there, we've been blacklisted, and I don't want to kick this guy while he's down. I've been there. I've got the karma to prove it. You know, I've done that to people, and it's been done to me, and I would not wish that upon anyone. That's why I try to go above and beyond to extend my hand. But you bite me when I extend my hand out there, and we're done. I can't mess with you. I can't, like, if I go out there and pick up a snake and the snake bites me, who's to blame, me or the snake? Especially if I go out there and do it again, keep getting bit by the same snake. No, you got to use wisdom and discernment, man, with all things. The scriptures is deep on this. And the scripture talks about giving people over to Satan. Let that sink in. What does that mean? Giving them over to Satan. It's really just pulling your hands back. Look, man, it's you and God. You and Satan, essentially. Like, I'm going to have to give you over to what's ailing you, and let you deal with that for a while and see what happens and see what you come to. And God has a way of wooing the hearts of people and setting up situations and sending demons into your life and downfall and things to let you know that he's the way. Like, he's the only place you're going to find serenity and solace is in him, this relationship with God. And that's what it's about. So with this brother, I pray for him. I release him, you know, all that stuff. And I believe that, I want his best days to be ahead of him. I want him to get clean. I want him to be happy. I want him to be in his kid's life and things like that. I hate the fact that everybody, you know, doesn't get the happy ending, which I was talking about. I believe in that. I fight for that. I don't live for the moment. I try not to. I try to make every decision with the future in mind of my future, of my daughter, my wife, my friends, my family, even myself, to kind of set myself up of like planting something today that comes into manifestation. Like building the life that we want, the vision that we have of ourselves when we go into meditation and you get these visions of yourself and what you want to do and why you're here. What is my purpose? And then you're so far removed from that purpose that you see yourself in the astral realms. It's like, okay, what can I do to achieve that? What can I do to actually tap into that? And there's things, practical things you can do to be whatever you want, whatever you're called to be, and aligning yourself with the universe or with God. God works with you. He doesn't work against you. He doesn't, you know, he's not mad at you. And we talk about the universe and God. That's a whole nother thing too. I've been just kind of contemplating, you know, some people like to say God. You go in New Age circles, they don't want you to say God because they think you're being religious. But, you know, we're talking about God in the universe. We're trying to use it interchangeably, but I don't think it's the same thing. I think that God created the universe. That's two different things. And we talk about the universe, that's not something that that loves you or something that's tangible, something that cares about you. God is personable. Like there's a, you can have a relationship with the loving God, with the spirit realm, right? So we're talking about people getting offended or not wanting to be, you know, not wanting to talk about God or whatever the case is. I've been, you know, I've went through that whole thing. I go into a lot of New Age broadcasts and shows and they have me on even within myself. But it is what it is, man. It's about God. And if you want to call it the universe, but I think the universe, God created you, the universe. And, you know what I'm saying? So there's a difference there. That's just a tangent. But some of these other questions here in the chat room, I see All It Is. His interview is going to be released soon, guys. All It Is. We did a song together, too. So make sure y'all check that out. A-L-L-I-T-I-Z. Just type in All It Is, one word, on YouTube with Truth Seeker. And you can check out the new song that we did about UFOs and the spirit realm. Some awesome stuff we went into. But he says here in the chat, he says, I believe we all have a lie detector built into our spirit. We just have to learn how to listen to it. Yep. We can sense things. And like I say we, right? So I think the different people have different giftings and different abilities. And it talks about this in the Bible, and it talks about the gift of discernment. And it says that, I know we want to say we because we do, like you do, I do, and you know people who do, but maybe some people don't. Maybe some people have other giftings and they're better at utilizing those gifts and for the body. So we all come together. Okay, Truth Seeker and All It Is, you guys are good at discernment. Here's somebody else who's good at speaking. Here's somebody other who has a gift of planning and bringing people together. All of these are gifts within the Bible. The gift of administration, making things happen, the gift of healing, the gift of prophecy, the gift of speaking in tongues. Obviously, I think we all can kind of tap into all of those areas, but we talk about the body, when we all come together and all of us are good at these things. Trust me, when the church in the book of Acts, this is what they did. They were all good at these different things. They came together and they functioned and they changed the generation. They changed everybody they came in contact with. It was not like an agenda driven thing of, hey, look at me. Some of that came into play, but they addressed it and they dealt with it and they did it the best way that they knew how. But we're talking about spiritual giftings. We're talking about some people good at divination of tapping into the spirit realm, casting lots, and these spiritual practice and this whole artillery that they had, man. And when they rolled together and they were on one accord, you couldn't stop them. And we can still build like that. We can work with that when we come together on one accord. For one man, Truth Seeker or whoever show or podcast or teacher you listen to who claims to have it figured out and they want to be the master teacher. Some people call themselves the master teacher. I've been getting a lot of links from this guy out there. He calls himself the master teacher. And I've known many master teachers on YouTube. But it's about a community, man. Anytime that one man is exalted, anytime that even like in a church setting when the pastor is the go-to guy, well, my pastor said this, my pastor's the man of God over my life, blah 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 blah, that's demonic. It's straight demonic. You can learn from that person. He could be a shepherd, but really essentially God, the Holy Spirit, Jesus is the shepherd. But it's when we come together, when we all come together, it's about a community. It's about the body of Christ. It's about the flower of life, all of us being an expression of God. And when we come together, we formulate the body of Christ on earth, the body of love, right? The body of what it says that if two or three gather in my name, there I am in the midst. So as you come together, you essentially formulate Jesus on the earth. You are the manifestations of the sons of God. That's what it's about. It's about coming together. It's about walking in the spirit of unity, in the spirit of love, man. I wanted to kind of give you guys some insight on what I've been going through this week. Also, too, maybe I want to speak on this, too. This is for the fathers out there and the mothers, too. But there's something. I've got this on my wrist for you guys who can see this on the video end. But I've got a pink tag on my wrist that says Get Air. Something I want to encourage you guys, man. This stuff is practical, man. There's something that I do that I want to pass down to you guys to do if you don't. At least one day a year, I take my daughter out to something I call Daddy Daughter Day. And it's usually check her out of school. I'll let her go for a couple hours and she doesn't know it. I have this day planned where I pick her up, we go ride go-karts, we go have lunch at somewhere special, and we go to the movies or whatever the case is. But I did one yesterday, or the day before. And so I wanted to talk about that a little bit. I want to talk about that to encourage you guys to do this. Whether if you're a father or if you're a mother, spend a few dollars. It ain't got to be... You can do it for less than $100, man, just to spend time. I mean, do it and even go on a walk. Go on a nature hike, you know, on just like a beautiful day. Check them out of school. Go spend time with just you and them. Not both parents, just one. And so go get your kid. Take them out. Day before yesterday, I took my daughter, went and got her. We went and got some lunch, had a good lunch. Then we went to this place called Get Air, which is a trampoline spot. And we went there and... I was trying to plan it out with a movie because there was a movie I wanted to go see and take her to the spot. But we went there to jump on these trampolines, this trampoline park, and we were the only people there. We went there right when it opens. I mean, how many kids are there at noon, you know, on a Tuesday? So we went to the trampoline park and we jumped. We had the whole place to ourselves, man. This whole trampoline. It was $20. I think it was $20, like $26 for us to do that. We went there and spent an hour, and then we went and seen a movie, and then went and got ice cream or whatever. But it's just something like that that I just encourage you guys, man. This stuff is practical. Just, you know, time is precious. Time is of the essence as well. And I want to encourage you guys to do that. Go check your kid out of school one day, man. It don't take a lot of money. So don't, even if you ain't got no money, man, you can go for a walk. You can go to the park and just get on the slide, whatever it is, man. But this stuff is practical, man. So... I'm reading all it is. He says great idea. I'll do it with my 5-year-old soon. He says we got to get air in Michigan too. Might have to try that. Much love, Truth. Yeah, do it when nobody's there too, man. So it's not crowded and kids are just you know, knocking everybody down and all that kind of stuff. But it was fun just to have the whole place to ourselves, man. And I try to do it once a year, every year. It's not planned. She don't know it. It's a surprise. She comes, you know, she's in school, comes out, it's like, here, we're going. And I had everything prepared. I love surprises, man. I've been able to surprise my wife and my daughter on many different occasions, and that I love surprises, man. Good surprises. Put it that way. I've had enough bad surprises in my life. So it's all about the good surprises and making them laugh, bringing smiles to people's faces and their faces. That's what I do. If I don't do anything else, man, as a father, I try to you know, be lighthearted and make them laugh and make them smile, you know, in a world out there that can be hard and cold-hearted at times. I try to keep things light. Even with you guys, man, I try to bring something to the table that's going to encourage you guys. It's going to better your life. It's going to, you know what I'm saying, make this walk a little bit easier, make it a little bit more enjoyable. I think we're supposed to enjoy life. I remember going through spirituality as a Christian and as like the Gnostic traditions, even they teach that you're not supposed to enjoy life, that you're supposed to like be a suffering servant, or what even in like the 5%ers, they call the poor righteous teachers. Like, and that was like, I thought that's what you had to be. You couldn't enjoy life. You weren't supposed to have money. You weren't supposed to have wealth or be happy and stuff. But that's, man, that's demonic, man. It's not of God, man. Everything is beautiful to enjoy everything in life. But to really reach that spirituality where you can go out and just sit in nature and be okay, where you can go and do that walk with your family or walk through the forest in the cool of the day and just enjoy it and feel connected with everything there, man. Spirituality lets you do that, and to know that you're one with all creation, with God, the Holy Spirit, which is there with you, with your breath as you're able to breathe in out in nature. Maybe even we went hiking. I remember I take my shoes off and I go barefoot hiking with the family, and we just connecting with the earth and the energies, getting grounded, putting our feet on the ground, like really connecting. It don't cost money. Like, it's free to do a lot of this stuff, man. And that's what it's about, man. To be to live in the moment, because that's all you have. You don't have tomorrow. You don't have yesterday. Yesterday's gone. But to be in the moment, like I always point out, Eckhart Tolle is a millionaire off of teaching people how to live in the now moment and how to find that power in the now moment. Well, that's why I talk about meditation. It's about focusing on the moment. We go into those realms. We get the vision for ourselves in the now moment. There is no tomorrow. We talk about going on, being set on autopilot and just living life, the mundane over and over. And then even with my family, like, even though like I do this stuff, I can still get on autopilot, and my family can do it. My daughter goes to school, comes home, does homework. We get dinner, we eat, we spend some time together. I do a podcast, whatever. And it can be monotonous. You get into the monotony of life. So you got to switch it up. You got to grab it and shake things up, even for yourself, man. Turn that autopilot switch off. I did it for years when I was working, and weeks would pass, man. And I'm just like, just going, just living, just doing it. And a lot of times it would come to play because it would make it worse, because I'd have something I was looking forward to a month out, 2 months out, 6 weeks from now. Whether it's Christmas, you know, you get close to Christmas, you're like, man, I can't wait till Christmas, or your birthday, or you're going to a concert, and you get on autopilot because you want that event to come quicker. So you have to shake yourself. You have to get out of that autopilot and don't let the moment pass you by, to be present in the moment and make those memories, man. Like, make those memories. That's what it's about. And I have to, it's a stump, man. It's a slump to fall into. I've gotten there. And then it's, you know, mindfulness, meditation, all of that helps to do that. And just to walk in gratitude. Start looking at your life and just find the things in your life that you can be thankful for. Starting with your breath. Take that deep breath in. Holy Spirit. A lot of times I can take that breath and I just feel the Holy Spirit when I breathe. It's the breath. It's the pneuma. It says Jesus breathed upon his disciples. They received the Holy Spirit. We can tap into the breath. That's the life force. Without that breath, you don't exist. You're not animated. This is the breath that animates all life. So it's as simple as that, being thankful for every little thing that we have, and just our limbs, our health, our family, our friends, you know, whatever you have in your life that you're thankful for, man, to really sit in awe of that, and then to even speak it out, express it. Like I said, we're not talking about a theory. We're talking about, or just a God who is distant. We're talking about this relationship with the Creator that longs for a relationship with you, that wants to hang out with you, that wants you to tell him or it your feelings or your fears and confess your faults to him. So he can take them. He takes all that, man. And that's what it's about. So let me see. So yeah, thank you everybody who's supporting my work. Lil T in the chat room, Andrew Jackson, Christy Folks, All It Is, Fano Matrix, everybody, Chris Garner, which Chris Garner's been hanging out for a while too. Kathy, Catherine, Kathleen, a little bit of everybody, man. Thank you guys for hanging out with me today. Thank you again for supporting my work. I couldn't do it without you. A little bit goes a long way doing this stuff. You guys know I do the podcast. It's free to consume. I used to do an hour free, and then the second half was for paid members. But now, like, I just do the whole thing free. So yeah, your support really helps me. So if you guys want me to continue doing these podcasts, doing these shows, continue making music, head on over to patreon.com/truthseeker, and there you can sign up for any level of giving. Got my music there. All the new music that I'm working on, it's already available if you're a patron. I got a new album coming out. The pre-order is available now. You get entered into a contest to win this big wall flag, and I'm signing every pre-order that comes through. So the album will be released on April the 20th. We're also doing a album release party. So if anybody wants to come to the concert that we're doing, I'll be performing live, and it's a free concert. It's at a house. It's going to be awesome. House shows are amazing. Haven't done one in years, but it's going to be awesome. So the show is free. Just get you room and you know what I'm saying? Rent a room, pay the gas, and come down. Like, I got friends driving over 8 hours to come to be here from Orlando. It's going to be fun. If you guys want to hang out, you want to meet, you'll get the chance to do that. So April the 20th, all the info is on my website, truthseeker.com. There's also some new merch on there. I don't promote the merch too much, but I do have T-shirts and things available promoting some different songs that I have. And even there's a True Seeker podcast T-shirt and some quotes and stuff like that from my lyrics. So all that stuff's available on my site as well. And so if you want to support, buy a shirt, all that good stuff. With that, I'm going to say peace and shalom. I enjoyed this episode. Got some more stuff lined up for you guys. And thank you guys for the support. With that, peace, shalom, God bless. Your will is so much higher than mine, so much higher than mine, so much deeper than mine, so much deeper than mine. Well, that does it for this episode, folks. To hear more episodes of the Truth Seeker podcast, head over to truthseeker.com. And if you're wanting to support the show and get rewards, go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/truthseeker.